This is Tea Earl Grey Heart, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Stormfront. Hello and welcome to episode one, because we've already done episode zero, of Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial fan podcast, Star Trek podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Dave.
And my name is Yannick.
And we are the two nerdy geeks who will be taking you on this journey through, through our journey into the Star Trek universe. If you haven't already listened to episode zero, I would recommend you go back and listen to it because it gives you quite a bit of insight into exactly what it is we're trying to achieve here. Something that we don't necessarily want to repeat on every single episode. So it's a good primer to give you an idea of what this show is intended for. But in a short form, this is a show where we're going to review certain episodes and we're going to just basically waffle on what is happening within the Star Trek universe at the current time. Now, the discussion of what is legitimately Star Trek will be coming up later on, because mm-hmm. we have had some feedback from episode zero already, which I'm really pleased about, from somebody that both Henrik and I know, and very, very good questions been asked about the authenticity of certain elements of the Star Trek universe. But we'll go on to that in a bit. But in the meantime, Yannick, sir, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm very glad that we can start recording this this show. Episode zero was kind of a bumpy ride, so let's hope this episode one will be smoother.
definitely. I think a couple of things that we've already picked up ourselves from episode zero. One of them was my audio quality was abysmal. So hopefully we've made changes to fix that. We're changing the way we're recording. And also the fact that the episode that we're recording at the moment is actually a week late, which is, again, my fault, because I was off on leave, en vacances, as I believe you say in the French-speaking world. I made the rather badly judged decision that it would be okay for me to try and record an episode of a podcast whilst I was on holiday. And let me tell you, that don't work.
Well, we don't really have a set schedule yet, so it's not really a problem, I guess.
No, I suppose not. And as well as not having a set schedule, we don't have a set format yet either. So we're gonna try and settle into the format and the flow as we go through these first few episodes.
Feedback is welcome in about this subject, about the format of our episodes. If you think that we should do that in another order or in another way, please get in touch with us. We will give you all the details at the end of this episode.
Indeed so. So on this episode, we are going to do what we threatened we were going to do on episode zero, is we're going to give you our review of episode one of season four of Star Trek Enterprise, which is called Stormfront, or it's the first part of a two-parter called Stormfront. Mm-hmm. Now, just as a bit of a background to those people who haven't seen Enterprise, because to be fair, I hadn't seen Enterprise until probably about 6 months ago, and I've been blitzing my way through it. The episode that we're going to be reviewing, I have actually seen for the first time, and I finished watching it approximately 24 minutes ago. So it's brand new for me. But I think because it's the first episode of season four, there are certain things that are going to be picked up from the end of season three that may not make sense to any of you that have not yet seen the other seasons of Enterprise, if that makes sense.
Yes, I think it does.
So Hang on a minute. We have a visitor.
Hello, visitor.
Hang on, he's not there yet. you just reminded me. You just reminded me of that that scene in I think it was number four, Journey Home, when Scotty is visiting that acrylics place, and he starts to use a computer, and he picks up the mouse and goes, "Hello, computer." Oh dear. Anyway, Alex, hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Right, so we are actually in the middle of a recording. This is going to be some nice editing work for me. if you want to appear on the show, then I will maybe leave bits in for you, but you have to not be shouting and saying unintelligible things at the microphone.
I'm just going to listen to it.
You're just going to listen. So I'm going to turn your microphone off for now then, yeah?
Yeah.
All right, okay. So at the end of season three of Enterprise, season three of Enterprise in itself was kind of a standalone cluster of episodes. They were all set within the expanse, a particular part of space, which I think, if I remember rightly, at the beginning of the season, it was deemed as a fairly inhospitable and inaccessible place. So when they were in there, the entirety of season three was almost like a standalone storyline, or like 24 episodes of it. But the main point of it was around the Zindi race, and they were building a weapon that was going to destroy. What was it going to destroy? It was going to destroy a star or a planet or something? Anyway, the upshot of it was that it was the intention of the Enterprise to thwart the Zindi plan to detonate this weapon to destroy whatever it was that it was going to destroy. So the end of episode 24 of season 3, which is called Zero Hour, the last thing that we saw, and actually the first thing you see as part of the recap of season 3, at the start of episode 1 of season 4, I hope you're keeping up with this, was that the Zindi weapon was destroyed. Archer stayed on the weapon, which is like a sphere, mm-hmm. That's right, and successfully destroyed it. However, at that particular moment in time, it was believed that Archer died, or certainly was missing in action at that point. And then the Enterprise left the expanse and went towards Earth. I'm doing air quotes here. Earth. The shuttle pod was then launched from Enterprise to go down to Earth. The shuttle pod one was then shot at by what looked like a squad of fighter jets being led by what I can only describe as a German version of Saru from Discovery. Because that,
yes.
To me, that's what he looked like. He looked a bit like Saru. Also, as part of the recap, you also find out that actually Archer isn't dead. He's been rescued or captured. I'm not sure exactly how he got onto Earth.
Yeah, that's one point of this episode.
Yeah, exactly. And, well, actually, the point of the episode is that we don't know how they got to Earth in the first place at all.
Yeah.
And certainly not in the middle of what appears to be World War II.
Yeah.
So the episode proper opens up revealing the fact that Archer has not died, and he's being escorted on the back of an open-back truck by a German officer, general.
Yeah.
That truck is then ambushed by insurgents, and Archer takes the opportunity to try and escape, but he's then shot at and captured by what I can only describe as a 1940s American gangster. I don't know whether you've seen, I'm just trying to think, there's a film I'm thinking of. One of the James Bond films where there's a funeral director, and all of the attendants, the funeral people, look like they're straight out of a 1940s gangster movie, and it's very much like
but
that.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yes, you can't miss it. It's they look like gangsters, and they actually are.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what they are. But they look very out of place when you put them in the in the scenario of World War II. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, there's a very good reason for that. But we then jump back onto the Enterprise when we're listening to a broadcast from Winston Churchill addressing, or we don't know, it could have been addressing the residents of Britain, or it could have been addressing the world. We don't know at this stage. We're not given that information. Trip is pretty much convinced they've travelled back in time, roughly 200 years back to the mid-20th century. But to Pol, who is clearly refusing to back down from the Vulcan belief that time travel cannot exist.
It's impossible, yes.
Exactly. So the first thing she does, she orders a
sensor diagnostic,
exactly.
She does what any good Vulcan would do.
Precisely. There has to be a logical explanation to this. If she'd done anything else, if she'd entertained the possibility that this could have been something like time travel, I would have been quite disappointed. But this obviously annoys Trip phenomenally. And later on, he does actually go back to her and apologise and say, look, I was out of order. But you have to appreciate that the Enterprise has just appeared in a very much unknown situation. So everybody's going to be quite tightly wound and very much on edge. So I think both Trip and T'Pol's responses are only to be expected.
Mm-hmm. And very well depicted, you know, relatively to the character, the both characters. They were, yes, very
absolutely. I mean, I'm going to say this now. I probably should have said it at the end, but I'm going to say it now, that the acting on this was actually pretty spot on. The way they approached this, it was pretty good. And then Travis suggested that them being where they are might not be an accident. And I have to admit that when I watched this episode through, that was the first thing that came to my mind, that them being there wasn't necessarily an accident, but I couldn't put a reason to it. I couldn't put any logical reason as to why they would have been sent there in the first place. Now, thankfully, that actually does come to light a bit later on in the episode. But I tell you what did interest me about that bit is that despite the fact that T'Pol was very, very keen to dismiss the suggestion that they'd got there through time travel, and yet when Travis suggested that the Enterprise had been sent there for a reason, she didn't dismiss that suggestion straight away.
Yeah.
She said something along the lines of, we must consider all possibilities.
Something like that, yes.
Which was a little bit of a backtrack and very out of character for a Vulcan, let alone for T'Pol as a person.
Yeah, I guess she's spent the last 3 years with the crew, all humans. She's the only Vulcan, and I believe in the first three seasons she has evolved from, you know, 100% Vulcan to maybe a little bit more human, I would say.
I would totally agree with that. When we first met T'Pol back in season one, she wasn't very likable. She was very, very straight, very flat, very, very matter of factness, as you would expect a Vulcan to be.
She didn't really go along with Archer, who's more like a boy scout and ready to, you know, impulsive and ready to accept many possibilities, and she was like, no, that's not possible. That's not how you do things. And keep in mind that at the beginning of season one, Vulcans were looking down on humans as not being ready to go in space.
Yeah, that comes up a number of times through seasons one and two. Yeah. Particularly, I think it was towards the end of season two when they were ready to take T'Pol off the Enterprise.
Yes.
And it was actually T'Pol that says, look, actually, this is probably the right place for me to be. Mm-hmm. Very, very out of character. Very out of character indeed. So next thing we saw in the episode is some weird-looking dude with a neck that bends backwards climbing along the ceiling of one of Enterprise's walkways.
Yeah, we know who that is.
In the next scene, we are in one of the German camps or the German offices. I think we discovered later on it was actually part of the White House in Washington. Mm-hmm. And there were two German officers discussing, in English, I did notice that, recent events of the war, and they started to talk about Archer. And one of the officers believed that Archer's communicator that they found with him when he was first captured, they believed it was from the future, leading them to believe that Archer was, in fact, a temporal agent, same as Daniels. So they can't understand how Archer might have found them.
Yeah, that was a really interesting point in this episode when suddenly some things become clear.
Yeah, that'll become a little bit clearer later on in the episode. And then we jump back onto the Enterprise. And like I said earlier, Trip actually did take the time to apologize to T'Pol about his behavior earlier. And they were discussing about how they really were very excited, or very, very keen, should I say, but probably not excited in T'Pol's case, but very keen to be going home. They were looking forward to going home. And they started thinking about where they might have been if they weren't in their current situation. I think Trip was on about working his way through various beaches,
yeah,
and just spending days on the beaches, which of course is pretty much anybody's idea of luxury. Then Malcolm enters the room and reports that in this World War II that we're currently placed in, there had been battles in two of the states of the US. Yep. But of course, in reality, in our reality, there were no battles in North America in World War II. So for me, it's now becoming a lot more apparent that something is definitely off here. This isn't just a case of going back in time. You're actually in a different timeline, or the timeline itself has been corrupted somehow.
Yes, and that's the interesting part of the episode starting now.
We then jump back onto the Enterprise, and this is really quite a heartwarming scene of Phlox and Porthos.
Yeah, that was so cute.
Yeah, he's very off it. He's obviously aware of the fact that Archer's not around, and Phlox is trying quite desperately and quite unsuccessfully to try and cheer him up. So I'm trying to think what the first thing was. It was like chicken liver and cheddar cheese. Mm-hmm. That was the first one, and then he offered to sing Phlox Porthos a lullaby.
Yeah,
which Porthos then moved away. And then Phlox was about to then get up and go and get a steak from the galley, and then the dude that we saw earlier on climbing the ceilings suddenly stumbles into sickbay and collapses in Phlox's arms. We then go back down to Earth, and we see Jonathan Archer lying on a couch being attended to by an unknown female. You know, the typical officer or even Star Trek captain thing. They get captured and then there's a woman with them and you think, oh, here we go again.
Yeah.
But actually no, this female, we did actually find out later on, is actually married, so there was never going to be any romance there. So Archer at the time was sleeping. He wakes up, he panics, he doesn't know where he is. Now, the woman identifies herself as Alicia Travers. That's her character name. Now, the moment that came up, my ears pricked up because I'm thinking, Travers. We know that name, don't we? But it's not. It's Travis.
Yeah.
Archer then explains how he got to where he is, or possibly how he wants her to know how he got where he is. She assumes that he's a sailor due to the patch on his uniform, suggesting that the ship, the Enterprise, the seafaring ship, had already left port recently and he got left behind. That was how she viewed it. Mm-hmm. She then reveals that it is in fact 1944, and Archer says, oh, so this is World War II. But Alicia hadn't heard of the phrase World War II before, which was interesting, because if we're following the same timeline, even though we're running in the parallel here, if we're running the same timeline, 1944 was actually quite near the end of the war. So I don't know where the phrase World War II came from, whether it was actually post-war that phrase was coined or not. But she said she liked the name. She said she thought it was appropriate somehow. And she also revealed to Archer that they were in Brooklyn, in New York City.
Yeah, much to the Archer's surprise, because
yeah, well, he was raised in upstate, I think he said, upstate New York. So it's obviously an area that he would have been reasonably familiar with. So the next shot we get is a really odd one. So we see a view of the White House from the outside with full-length banners of the Third Reich across the front of the building and another one flying from the top of the building where they normally have the Stars and Stripes flying from. The next scene, we're inside, we're watching a film of a weapons demonstration between two of the German officers. Sorry, the weapons demonstration film wasn't between these two people. These two were watching it. One of them was a human officer, and one of them was some unknown alien officer. And during the conversation, it was actually difficult to try and work out which was the senior of the two. I would be inclined to suggest that in actual terms of rank, it was actually the alien officer that had the higher rank. But again, we don't know this. But the interaction between them, because the alien officer is demanding supplies in order to help develop this weapon that he's demonstrating on the film. But the human general isn't happy about diverting resources from the war effort. The human officer then shows us a map on the wall that's showing the progress of the German advances on the east coast of the United States. And I think at this stage in the war, they're covering approximately, I don't know, 7 or 8 US states that they're advancing through on the eastern coast.
The eastern, did they go down to Florida? Well, I don't remember if they were all down there, but definitely the north east
yes,
section.
Absolutely,
definitely.
So New York, parts of Ohio, mm-hmm. Parts of Virginia, West Virginia, I think Connecticut, and the small New England states as well, mm-hmm. seem to have been either captured in their entirety or certainly in part. But actually, when you look at it, you think, is that all they've got?
Yeah,
because it was a tiny sliver. If you look at the entire United States, it wasn't that big a capture. And I remember the human officer saying something along the lines of, it is believed that the German army is advancing too quickly and too hard.
Yeah.
Obviously, at this stage, the German front in the advances on the US is kind of suffering at this stage. And the alien officer, who I believe we find out who he is, we find out what his name is towards the end of the episode, but at this stage, again, I don't think we know exactly who he is. He offers the opportunity of a plague, some kind of virus, that will be targeted towards, and I think the phrase he used was non-Aryans.
Yes, that's what he said.
So it was a cleansing plague that they were trying to put through. Of course, this is actually quite accurate to how the attacks were performed in Nazi Germany. And they kind of agree that their ideals, the human and the alien officers, they kind of agree that their ideals were aligned. And the alien officer then again says that he needs these supplies. I mean, the supplies he was talking about, we're talking about, you know, hundreds of tons of carbon steel and was 80 something tons of aluminium casings or something in order to build these weapons. Because of course, back in 1944, if you think that we are probably 200 years apart from where this alien has come from, obviously technology would have advanced to the point where you could have a weapon that has quite an amazing yield in the palm of your hand.
Yeah, that's what he said. That's the back in his timeline, or his in time, he has energy sources the size of a small button.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, yeah. But obviously, now what they're talking about back in mid-20th century.
Huge
yeah, absolutely. It's like the yeah. size of rooms. Mm. You know, picture your old mainframe machines. you know, that's got the same power as a water pistol or something stupid. In the next scene, we are back on the Enterprise. We're back in medical sick bay, and Phlox is discussing the patient that appeared and collapsed in his arms with T'Pol. It turns out, it's Daniels, the temporal agent that's been popping up throughout all of the series of Enterprise so far. And Phlox is trying to explain what is happening to Daniels, because he's not a well fella. I think that's probably not understating it. And he's trying to explain that there are some parts of his body, some parts of his anatomy, that have aged incredibly excessively, whereas other parts of his body are almost, you know, at fetal stage. Yeah. But he can't explain this. He's got no theories at all, and suggests that, you know, he doesn't have much time left. He says he's not going to last for much more than 24 hours. And it's there that T'Pol has suggested that it might actually have been Daniels that brought them to the mid-20th century Earth.
Yes, which makes sense at this moment.
Now, obviously for me at this point, lots of things are now dropping into place, because now I know who this dude is and who he's supposed to be. Right, we're back in New York again, and we see these gangsters walking through the streets. Now, this was an interesting one for me, because it appeared as though there was a chap that fell down a set of stairs, and then a German officer just shot him in the head.
Yeah.
Just a pure execution. There was no reason or rhyme for it whatsoever. Yep. And I actually thought that was, for an episode of Star Trek, that was actually quite violent.
Yes, that's one of the things that came out of this episode for me. The number of human casualties in this episode, it's not typical Star Trek. And as you said, there was no reason for that public execution. So yeah, I thought it was not violent in the pictures, but in the feeling that was,
yes,
yeah, it really felt like it was not a safe place, not really. And of course it's war, but it was very well depicted during this episode. Not typical Star Trek.
No, totally not. I mean, it's not the first time we've ever been to modern day Earth during the course of Star Trek's existence. I think I mentioned to you between recordings that the Search for Spock, which I think was the third film.
Yeah.
Third, fourth? Oh, no, sorry, it wasn't. It was The Journey Home, which was the fourth one, when they went to late 20th century Earth in the proper timeline. And it was very safe. It was very, yeah, there was no conflict. There was nothing out of the ordinary that you would have expected. But yeah, this particular sort of drop back to 20th century Earth was, definitely not expected. Nope. At all. These gangsters, which I think are the same ones that we saw right at the very beginning when Archer was first, what we now know is rescued. He was shot, yes, but he was then rescued by these dude. The leader of the group was called Sal, and they knock on the door of Alicia's apartment where Archer is staying. And just to give you some idea of how strained feeling was at that particular time, that she's carrying a gun around with her. So she goes up to the door with a gun concealed behind her back, because obviously she fears for her safety. So she finds out who they are, lets them in. And Sal says that Vic, who is one of their gang, has been arrested. And the Gestapo is actually looking for Archer. And there is a $10,000 bounty on Archer's head. But Archer says he doesn't know why.
Which is probably true.
But then, and this was an interesting one, he then said, it's classified, because obviously he is a member of the military for the purposes of this.
Yeah, he's improvising. He's
the military. Yeah, exactly. And even with Sal's gun pointed at his head and a countdown that starts from three, he doesn't crack. He doesn't even blink, which, you know, this is the side of a true warrior,
a true captain.
Sal is stopped by one of his cronies, one of his goons. And Archer tries to suggest that, you know, they're all on the same side, despite the fact that this chap's come from nowhere and nobody knows why he's there. He doesn't even know why he's there. That, you know, they're all on the same side here. Of course, the gangster dudes, they're not going to believe that, because they don't know him from the next person on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so we're then back at, I have to say, as far as episodes go, this one tends to jump back and forward between different scenes a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
It really does. Even more so later on in the episode, we're kind of jumping between Earth to the Enterprise and then back to Earth and then back to Enterprise just for like short periods of time. So we end up back in medical on the Enterprise, and Daniels is now conscious, but Phlox, he doesn't know how long he's going to be conscious for. So to T'Pol, it's important for her to start getting some information out of Daniels before he dies. She tells Daniels that Archer is dead, because at this point, the crew on the Enterprise, they know no different. They still believe he is dead. They thought he died on the Zindi weapon. Yeah. At this point, Daniel admits to her that he is responsible for the reason that they are back in this corrupted timeline of 1940s America. And he starts to explain the reasons why, and it is to do with the temporal Cold War, which we kind of got snippets of in later episodes of Enterprise. And apparently it's now progressed into quite a messy conflict, and temporal agents, including Daniels, have been ordered to try and change history in order to prevent time agent factions from effectively wiping each other out.
Yeah, that part was not really clear for me. I mean, we know that they're trying to, every faction is trying to wipe the other ones, but maybe I should watch the episode again. But that was one of the not so clear parts for me.
Yeah, well, he goes into a bit more detail later on. In fact, quite close to the. Oh, in fact, it's very much towards the end of the episode. I mean, he goes into a lot more detail as to what has actually happened. T'Pol explains to Daniels that the World War II that they're currently sitting inside of is not the one that has been recorded in history. Now, from our perspective, yeah, that's kind of like a duh moment. But obviously, you have to bear in mind that the crew of the Enterprise are in the 22nd, early 23rd century.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't have been aware of World War II firsthand, or even sort of handed down stories like we are at the moment. So everything that they know about World War II is what has been recorded in history in books and in databases. But Daniels is kind of suggesting that this is the result of various different violent incursions occurring at different times. T'Pol asks Daniels, you know, how do we get back? How do we get back to our own timeline? Daniel says, you can't.
Nope.
Because it doesn't exist anymore in the way they know it. So these incursions, these time battles, for want of a better phrase, are changing the future to the point where even if they did time jump 200 years into the future, it wouldn't look anything like they remembered it. In fact, we wouldn't even know that they existed in that timeline.
Everything has changed.
Yeah, precisely. It's a really weird one to try and get your head around. I'm struggling to try and understand that, you know, they've been thrown back 200 years into the past, but actually where they've come from doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, that's the problem with time travel.
Well, I was about to say, this is something that that's cropped up many times on Doctor Who. That if you go back in the past and you interact with people in the past, you must do nothing that could potentially change the progress of time going forwards.
Yeah.
And it's for this exact reason.
Mm-hmm. Back to the Future was a great example of that.
Perfect. In fact, that's an even better example. Back to the Future. Yeah, totally. And then towards the end of that scene, Daniels says, he starts to get a bit delirious, and he says, you have to stop him.
Yes, and then in a very Hollywood fashion, he passed out.
And T'Pol's like, stop who? Stop who? Beep, 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 beep. And all the alarms go off left, right, and centre.
Yes.
So now the next set of scenes kind of fill in a lot more gaps for me. We're back on Earth, back in New York, and Archer, he tries very, very subtly to speak to Alicia about the Germans. And she mentions about this this German officer who may have a slightly different appearance to the others. You know, his skin might be slightly greyer, his eyes might be slightly redder.
Slightly, yeah.
Yeah. But the weird thing is that if you'd said that to anybody, you'd expect, at the very least, confusion. You know, what are you talking about? But actually, she didn't blink. She didn't seem surprised at all.
Yes.
And she suggested at this point that Sal, her gangster friend chap, might know a little bit more about this grey-skinned, red-eyed officer. And actually, that was a very good example of an incredibly short scene, because actually, where we are now, we're back on the Enterprise. So Trip is back in the shuttle bay, mm-hmm. And he's with one of his engineers, and they're trying to fix something in the shuttle bay, probably just repairing one of the shuttle pods. And he's on his own.
Yes,
because he sends the other chap off to get a part. To rip off a part from another part of the ship. Mm-hmm. And suddenly he's aware of the fact that he's not alone. There's no one in there, but he's not alone. And yeah, it's Silic. He appears. So this is presumably the chap that was climbing on the ceilings earlier on. So Silic from season three, mm-hmm. they have a little fight. Silic does this weird kind of head shrinking trick, and it escapes from Trip's clutches, and he shoots Trip.
It stuns him.
Yeah, which stuns him. We're then on the bridge, and the bridge gets an alert that somebody is launching a shuttle pod, and the life signs indicate that Suliban is aboard the shuttle pod.
Yep.
So Silic has clearly nicked a shuttle pod and done a runner.
Yeah, so there's something strange here. See, Silic gets into the shuttle bay and points a weapon to Trip and says, "You come with me in the shuttle pod." And then they fight. Then he shoots Trip. He takes him out of the shuttle bay, and he lives on his own. So why did he need the Trip for in the first place? I mean, he could just have came behind him, knock him on the head, and escape with the shuttle pod. So that part is strange.
Yeah, I mean, clearly it was the shuttle pod he wanted.
Yeah.
There was no question about that at all, because again, that comes up later on in the episode. But the reasons why it was done that way, no.
I don't know.
Not a clue at all. Right, so the next, I'm going to call it a cluster of scenes, because we do jump very, very quickly between Earth and the Enterprise. So back on Earth, Sal takes Archer and Alicia to see this chap that Sal knows about a character who is asking questions about both sides of the war. So they're asking about the resistance, the insurgents, and they're asking about the Germans. And it turns out that the person that they're talking about is one of our non-human friends, one of our alien friends that we have actually seen him before. We have seen him talking to the German officer.
Yeah.
So clearly he's one of his, I don't know what you call him, race mates. So it's probably not the right phrase, but we then jump to, I'm not sure where we are at this point. We're out of town somewhere on Earth, and Trip and Travis beam down to Earth. And then back with Archer, the alien then appears and approaches both Sal and Archer. He comes armed, but obviously it's that classic comical situation where somebody picks up a gun and points it, and then about 17 other people then point the gun back at him. He's like, okay. So he's disarmed very quickly and then brought out into the light. So they actually see.
Everybody sees the face.
And then we jump out of town, and Trip and Travis are clearly looking for the shuttle pod that Silic nicked, and they find it.
Yep.
And then we're back with Archer. He tries to interrogate the alien, asking why it is that they're changing the future. So we're not getting much of an answer from him here. And Sal's goons are getting a little bit itchy. They're starting to get a little bit frustrated and a little bit trigger happy. They're pointing their guns at people just to try and get answers out of people.
The good old gun stairway.
Yeah, absolutely. And it turns out, this is where we start to get a little bit of an insight into what is actually going on here. So the alien says that they are trapped, or they've been trapped by the Germans. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to build some kind of gateway, a conduit, to escape from this part of the timeline. Now, I wasn't sure what this meant at this stage, why they were being trapped. From what I was seeing, there was no trapping involved here. They mm-hmm. were as complicit in the war as the Germans were. So there didn't seem to be any evidence that I'd seen thus far that suggested that they were prisoners. Is that the right word? I don't know. Prisoners of the Germans.
Yeah.
Or they're being held in some form of captivity by the Germans.
Yeah, because he didn't explain what he meant by trapped.
No, exactly. But he did reveal that he knows that Archer is a temporal agent. Again, so that use of the phrase temporal agent. Clearly, they don't know who he is. But because they detected his ship in orbit, because that's where the Enterprise is, they immediately jump to the conclusion that he is one of these temporal agents.
And Archer doesn't deny.
He doesn't know. However, he didn't get much of a chance to, because one of Sal's goons got a little bit trigger happy and shot the alien dead. So that kind of... I'm surprised that Archer wasn't a little bit more annoyed than he was about this. Because usually when you're trying to get answers out of people, you tend not to kill them.
Yeah.
You tend to imprison them or threaten them or torture them, but you don't just shoot them. That's a little bit daft. But there again, the gun happy culture of the gangster world, mm-hmm. I suppose. Back at the shuttle pod, Travis and Trip have looked around the shuttle pod and they have determined that it won't fly, and it could be up to a week before they can get it going again. Back with Archer and his friends, in quotes, they've just realised they're out past their curfew. So the German, I think what happened here is that they're obviously there as a group. I think there's five or six of them as a group, Archer, Alicia, and Sal and his cronies. Mm-hmm. And there are some other people who are around the street.
Yes, and that's too many people.
Yeah, I'm wondering whether they could have been working for the Germans.
I don't know.
Keeping an eye on the streets and alerting the Germans that there are people out when they shouldn't be. I couldn't work that one out myself. But they did say, yeah, absolutely right. They did say too many people on the street.
Yeah.
So the Germans come out of whatever building they're in, gunfire everywhere. And I think Sal got shot.
Yes, Sal gets shot. And Archer and Alicia managed to escape in a dark alley somewhere.
Which, of course, is the obvious place to go if you're trying to escape gunfire, is get yourself blocked down a dead end. Absolutely. Yes. But one thing I forgot to mention, actually, that before the alien was shot, Archer got hold of his little communicating device, little green glowy thing, the size of a hockey puck. And he said, oh, I wonder if I can get in touch with the Enterprise on this. So while they're down this alleyway trying to sort of defend themselves from the gunfire, Archer is using this communicator to try and contact Enterprise.
While Alicia is shooting back at the
time. And running very quickly out of bullets multiple times, I notice, yes.
And complaining to Archer that he's not doing anything.
Yeah, well, she could have, changed her mind shortly after that.
Yeah.
Back at the shuttle pod, Trip and Travis, I missed whether they actually announced they were going to do this.
Yes.
But actually, it was the obvious thing to do, is they destroy the shuttle pod. They set some charges, blew it up, and managed to kill some nosy Germans in the process.
Blowing up some Germans in the process, yes.
Yeah, well, exactly. You could maybe call that a war victory, I don't know. There were some Germans who saw the shuttle pod was there, started to investigate. They actually went in there and sat down and got themselves comfortable,
mm-hmm.
and then got blown up. And then very soon after that, because I think there must have been some other of the German officers that weren't blown up as part of the shuttle pod, they captured.
Well, the explosion probably got some attention from the Germans.
You think? Yeah, definitely. So we're heading towards the end of the episode here. On the bridge, of the Enterprise, they actually receive Archer's communication. And as Archer actually manages to get established communication with the Enterprise, the last thing he says is to beam up. And then all of a sudden, they're then cornered by these German officers. And just as they are about to get shot, they get beamed out.
Again, in a very Hollywood fashion.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of tropes kicking in here. A lot of I suppose, reusable plot lines that are being applied here. I don't know what the budget was for Star Trek Enterprise. I mean, there was four seasons of it. It had Star Trek, you know, the Star Trek brand behind it. It was a canon series. But they didn't really need to use much in the way of special effects, I wouldn't have thought, with Enterprise itself. A lot of the episodes that we'd seen in the earlier series were, you know, one or two principal scenes. You know, you were going from the bridge to engineering, and that was the entire episode, sort of bouncing between the two, or from the bridge to the outer hull. There was the episode when they had to try and remove these mines. And it was just going backs and forwards. So special effects weren't really required that much.
Yeah.
But this is actually quite a complex episode in the grand scheme of things. So they're now Archer and Alicia are now on the Enterprise. The crew in shock, but very welcoming to the fact that Archer is now back with them. The alien communicator that he managed to get in contact with the Enterprise, Archer gave that to T'Pol to try and find out whether they could use it to intercept the communications between the aliens. Kind of, I suppose this is kind of your 23rd century version of the Enigma machine, where they're using their own technology to intercept their own communications. Archer then goes to speak to Daniels, who is fading pretty fast, and we learn about a particular character called Vosk. Now, Vosk is apparently the leader of a faction that is opposed to the Temporal Accords. So, as I understand it, these are the rules and guidelines that are in place to ensure that effectively what is happening right now, in as much as the timeline has been corrupted, can't happen.
Yes, I understand that too.
And Vosk apparently has this ability to try time travel with stealth. So he's almost got this like cloaking device around him that he can travel around without other time agents knowing what he's doing. So Daniels then reveals that he explicitly sent Enterprise to this timeline, as that is the place, this timeline is the place where Vosk can be stopped. So I am now thinking that the alien general, the one that was right at the very beginning asking for supplies to build this weapon, I'm thinking this is Vosk.
Yes, I agree.
And I'm also thinking that actually it's not a weapon he's building.
I agree too.
He's trying to build something that will allow him to get back to where he needed to go to. Because another thing that Daniels revealed is that the trip that he made to get to where he is, he cannot get back from. It was a one-way trip. So this is what he means, or this I believe is what he means, by saying that he is trapped.
Yes.
But I don't think he meant by the Germans. I think he meant with the Germans.
That was not Vosk, because the guy who said they were trapped is now dead. So that was the other alien.
No, absolutely. But obviously these two guys are working, or were working, before one of them got killed, together.
Yeah.
So they have been trapped by whatever it is that sent them there.
And now
they now need to build this gateway portal conduit, I think they called it.
Conduit, yes.
To return to wherever it is they need to get back to. Presumably, what they're trying to do is they're trying to reshape the future to build it in such a way that removes any form of block with these other factions, effectively make it so these other factions don't exist anymore.
Yep.
That's kind of what it says to me.
Yes, I agree.
And yeah, once Daniel's revealed that this is what needs to be done and this is why it's happened, obviously, again, another classic Hollywood trope, he died.
Yes.
So,
because why not?
Exactly, because why not? But you say because why not, but is he actually dead? Because he probably exists in another timeline.
Yes, we'll see.
So, you know, he could come back at some point. We just don't know, and I haven't looked at the cast lists if he appears on any other episode but episode one. But, yeah, so that's kind of where we left that part of the storyline. And then very end, very final scene of the episode is where we see Trip and Travis being presented to who we now believe is Vosk, who said, he said something weird. He said, it's time for another experiment.
Another test, I think.
Test, absolutely. And Trip and Travis were then taken away, presumably for questioning. And that's kind of where it was left.
Yeah, you forgot the big cliffhanger. The last scene.
To be continued.
Yes, and Vosk walking into a huge room or something like that. That's probably the conduit.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. No, you're absolutely right. That's right. It was almost like walking into like a warehouse.
Yes, that's it. Warehouse
surrounded by elements of swastikas and the like. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what was in there, you know, we can only guess what it actually was. But I would imagine that a lot of that will get answered as part of the second part, episode two, second part of Stormfront, yep, which we will be reviewing on our next episode.
Absolutely.
For me, I think this is quite a strong start to the season. I was a little bit concerned by what I saw at the end of season three, the little bit of insight into World War II and this Saru-looking German alien general. But no, it hasn't disappointed. It was really good. And I think they're probably spending a little bit more time storytelling as opposed to action.
Season three was not the best one, to be honest with you. And I believe that they heard the fans, and they were trying to change things for season four, and I think it was too late anyway, and that's why the series ended up at the end of season four. But season four is arguably better than the previous one, so we still have plenty of nice episodes to review.
Absolutely, 22 of them, I believe, or 21 more, should I say?
Something like that. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's where we are. That was season four of Star Trek Enterprise. I don't know what day it is, let alone what episode we're on.
Okay, so we're going to split those news in two parts. So we're going to go over some news about Star Trek Picard and then some news about Star Trek in general. So Star Trek Picard will be aired in early 2020. We believe it's early 2020. But in the meantime, there's going to be some books about Picard, books that will introduce new characters and new storylines, starting in November. So that's, 2 months from now? IDW will release Star Trek Picard Countdown, a deluxe three-issue miniseries written by Mike Johnson and series supervising producer Kristen Bayer. This countdown event centers around a mission that would go on to change the life of beloved Star Trek Captain Jean-Luc Picard. So probably something important for the upcoming series. And following countdown's conclusion, Simon and Schuster's Gallery Books will release The Last Best Hope in February 2020, written by Una McCormack. The novel will also lead directly into the show and continue to introduce fans to brand new characters and features in the series. So, yeah, I guess this is going to be... I don't think it's going to be mandatory to understand the series, but probably a good material to wait until the series finally air.
Definitely. I was going to ask the question whether this is actually going to be leading into Star Trek Picard.
Yes,
and it looks like it does. And I think if this for the benefit of fans, this is probably going to be more giving you a bit of an insight into the characters that are going to be taking part in Picard, rather than something that actually is required reading for historical purposes.
I'm going to try to get a copy of that. Actually, if if someone from IDW listens to this show, you can send us a copy and we will review it on the show.
Well, we could always email them and say,
absolutely,
please, Mr. IDW, send us a, or Mrs. IDW, please send us a review copy and we'll say how wonderful you are.
And while we read those books, we can drink a glass of Chateau Picard, because Chateau Picard actually exists. It's a wineyard in Bordeaux in southwest of France. and
you're a Frenchman.
Yes, I am. So a company called Wines That Rock has been working with the actual Chateau Picard's vineyard located in Bordeaux to craft a limited edition wine called Chateau Picard Cru Bourgeois, which is an 85% Cabernet Sauvignon and 15% Merlot that is subtly smoky and spicy with a bright, fresh, clean-tasting style. I'm quoting. I haven't tested that. Drink responsibly, of course, as always.
I have to see if I can get myself a bottle of that. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine it'll be cheap, but I didn't know the Chateau Picard was actually a thing.
I didn't know either.
I wonder if the bottles that we saw in the trailer were actually actual Chateau Picard.
What they said in the news is that Chateau Picard existed before Star Trek Picard, and probably even before Star Trek Next Gen. So there's no relation between the actual vineyard and the series. But then Wines That Rock worked with them and said, okay, so you've got Chateau Picard and we've got this new series coming up. And they made a wine especially for the series. The link to the news will be in the show notes, of course, so check that out. Also, we were talking between recordings last week about the movies, the four Star Trek Next Gen movies, and I was complaining that I was not able to find them either on Netflix or Amazon Prime. And the reason might be because CBS Home Entertainment will be releasing on October 15th the Star Trek Picard movie and TV collection, which is a 6-disc Blu-ray set that will include all four Star Trek Next Generation movies and two feature-length TV episodes, The Best of Both Worlds and Chain of Command, reconfigured to play seamlessly like movies.
Now, clever.
Yeah. Now, I do have a question. Do you really need a full Blu-ray disc to put 90 minutes of 4x3, 525-line NTSC video? I'm not sure. I think this is a little bit overkill. I bet they could have fit a whole season on the Blu-ray disc and not lose any video quality.
No, is the answer to that. Because it depends. If they're going to remaster it from the original, original shooting, because it would have been shot on film.
Probably, yes.
The films would have, the movies would have been, the TV episodes may have been shot on video.
Yeah, probably.
And obviously it depends on what they would have shot it on. From my past experience, the broadcast quality of video recorded TV shows would be marginally higher. Sorry, the archive quality of recorded TV shows would have been marginally higher than the broadcast versions of them. So even if there were NTSC, which I think, is it 525 or is it 425?
It's 525 and 525. The file is 625.
625, yeah. So, the resolution is reasonably abysmal. It's really low resolution. Mm-hmm. I mean, on today's LCD panels, you're talking about the size of, your thumbnail possibly. It's not a big resolution at all. You're only talking, I think it's 700 and something pixels across by 500 and something pixels down, which is like a quarter of my, well, less than a quarter of my screen.
Yeah, I'm watching Next Gen on Netflix right now, and I watched that on my huge full HD TV, and you can see the quality of the picture is not really great, but still, it's a good series. Right, news about Star Trek in general. September 8th, which is like two, 3 weeks from now, that will be Star Trek Day. And I was looking why this day is called Star Trek Day, because that's because the first episode of the original series was aired on September
8th, 1966. Wow, 53 years ago. Wow, that's scary.
Get your Starfleet uniforms ready. And put on your pointy ears. Yes, let's all celebrate Star Trek Day on September 8th.
Yeah, I have a slight problem with that at my workplace. I think if I even mentioned the fact that it's Star Trek Day, I would probably get beaten to death with lightsabers. Because most of my colleagues are the other star thing.
Some good news. It's the reunification between CBS and Viacom. So Viacom is Paramount's parent company, and so together CBS and Viacom holds the rights for both the series and the movies. The merger between CBS and Viacom, owners of the Star Trek television and film rights respectively, means that for the first time since the two companies split in 2005, the Star Trek franchise, TV and movie rights alike, would be housed under one roof, which means that if there is ever another Star Trek movie, it could actually look like what's going on in the series. It could be an extension of what's going on in the series, and it doesn't need to be looking different and be not related to the series. So that's back in the next gen days where the movies were an extension of the series.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, and that's really good news, I believe. Also, there's a documentary that was, I believe it was crowdfunded first, and it's the Deep Space Nine documentary, What We Left Behind. For what I understand, it's a documentary about, you know, the whole behind the scenes and the actors talking about the series and what that series brought to Star Trek and to the lives of the actors. And it will be, well, it was in crowdfunded, and it will be released digitally pretty soon. I'm just looking at my notes because I've lost August 6th. Well, it was released. It's already released. Yeah, we're recording this episode on the 20th of August. So it will be released on DVD. It will be released on Blu-ray and also digitally via iTunes, Google Play, and other content providers. So it's not really defined yet in the US, Canada, and most European territories. So let's hope it will be available on one of the two I have here in Switzerland.
I think I'd have to start actually watching the Deep Space Nine series to even have an iota of understanding of what that would be about, because I think I've probably seen about half.
It's a really good episode. Series. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
And finally, in the news, Star Trek Discovery Season 2 comes to Blu-ray. I don't have any more details right now because I was lazy and I didn't put that in my show notes, but check out our show notes and you will have a link to that and Season 2 of Discovery on Blu-ray pretty soon.
Fantastic. Well, there's a huge amount of news there. Hopefully, there will be plenty enough for us to mention some new stuff next episode. We have had some feedback already. I think we teased this at the beginning of the episode. So we had some feedback from Ro, who is somebody that both Yannick and I know. He's a podcaster in his own right, does a podcast called the Dark Compass podcast, which is a metal rock music podcast. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. It'd probably be nice to send some listeners his way.
Of course.
And he dropped me a text, actually. He has my mobile number. Please don't ask for my mobile number. You won't get it. He dropped me a text and he was asking, because we mentioned, I think it actually might have been a throwaway comment that you made, Yannick.
Yes.
That we don't talk about the reboot. And the question that Ro asked was, if you're going to do a Star Trek show, then you have to talk about the reboot. That wasn't a question. That was actually a statement. The question that's come out the back of this is whether the Kelvin timeline, which is the timeline that is covered by the Star Trek reboot films, which I think started in 2009, whether they are considered canon or not.
Yeah.
Now, I have done some research. I spent quite a bit of time trying to research into this. And it depends on who you ask.
Exactly.
As to whether it is considered canon or not.
There's no definitive answer to this question.
There are two Wikia sites. One's called Memory Alpha, one's called Memory Beta. And the Memory Alpha is supposed to be dedicated to the canonical Star Trek universe, including the TV shows and the films. Whereas Memory Beta is supposed to be the non-canon wiki for things like fan fiction and, you know, other stuff that that comes up within the universe that isn't necessarily part of the stock universe. However, according to both of those, let me get this the right way around, they suggest that the Kelvin timeline, the 2009 reboot films, the J.J. Abrams films, are not canon.
Yeah.
Did I get that right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I also did some digging around on the incredibly accurate and very much to be trusted Wikipedia. Sarcasm, folks. And it says on there that all Star Trek films and TV series are to be considered canon. So it really does depend on who you ask. And I think the only way we would actually get a definitive answer is if we asked a definitive source. So I think that might be something we have to do. We have to actually go to the source, go to CBS or try and get hold of somebody in one of the production companies, speak mm-hmm. to some of the current executive producers of the stuff that's going out at the moment, and actually ask them definitively whether they would consider that the Kelvin timeline would be canon or not. I think if we asked J.J. Abrams, he'd probably say yes.
Yes, of course.
I think if you ask someone like Alex Kurtzman, who was the showrunner for Discovery, and I think he's also showrunner for Picard, although in Picard they're saying they don't have showrunners, they just have a team of talented producers.
Yeah, well.
whether they would consider the Kelvin timeline canon or not would be whether they're friends with J.J. Abrams. So, again, we don't know the answer to this question. We will look into it. If anybody listening to this is aware of where we can find out definitively whether the Kelvin timeline will be considered canon or not, then please do let us know. However, I think the question here that kind of started all this is whether we should include the films of the Kelvin timeline in the scope of this podcast.
Well, given that Ro sent us a feedback and said that if we are going to talk about Star Trek, we need to talk about the reboot movies, I would say 100% of our listener who sent us feedback do feel like we should talk about that. So if there is a reason to talk about the movies, then yeah, we can talk about that. I mean, it was kind of a joke when I said that we don't talk about the...
Oh, totally. I mean, I certainly wasn't taking what you said particularly seriously. However, it does raise a very good question about I don't want to say legitimacy because that sounds wrong, but you know what I mean. The legitimacy of the reboot films as to whether they are effectively a fan fiction, because they're not in the same timeline, then it's a parallel timeline. Although it does answer a lot of the questions that are highlighted in some of the earlier films about how Kirk got into Starfleet, for example, something that was never actually answered within the original set of films, or even it was never even mentioned at all in the series, as far as I'm aware. But they did actually go through and show how Kirk managed to defeat the test.
Yeah, the Kobayashi Maru.
Exactly, but was that actually how it happened, or was that an imagination of what happened? Who knows?
Yeah.
Does it matter?
Not really. But with the reunification of CBS and Viacom, I believe this timeline is now defunct, because now that the series and the movies can talk about the same things, there's no point continuing with this Kelvin timeline. Plus, we know that the actors actually refused to shoot the fourth movie. So I'm a little bit concerned with the... Well, not concerned, but I don't think this timeline have any kind of future. But that's just my opinion.
Well, it's something to consider, and again, something that we very much welcome feedback on.
Yeah, and so if you consider that the Kelvin timeline is canon, or if it's, you consider it's not canon, and you absolutely, you know, will stand on your feet about that, send us some feedback. We will give you what we can do that now. So feedback at talgreyhut.org. That's our email address to send us anything you want, really. If you want to tell us how good we are or bad we are or what we have to change, etc., don't hesitate. Send us feedback at talgreyhut.org.
Yeah, of course, you can comment on the show notes for the episodes on the website itself, which is tlgreyhart.org. And I would also suggest, with something we've not written down here on the show notes, but we should probably add going forward, if you are enjoying these episodes, please feel free to leave us a good review on whichever platform you got this podcast from.
And share the podcast with your friends. That's the very important for us, that the words get spread out and that, you know, we have many listeners.
as someone said to me once, someone wise, probably my mum, if you like what we do, tell others. If you don't, tell us.
Yes, exactly. Your mother was very wise.
Yes, it probably wasn't her, but we'll give her credit for it anyway.
Yes. You can talk to us on Twitter also. We are TLGreyHut2 because, well, TLGreyHut was already taken. So we went for the next best thing.
And this episode is being released under a Creative Commons by attribution share alike license, which means you can do pretty much whatever you want with it, as long as you credit us as the original authors. And if you want to publish something based on this episode, you're very welcome to reproduce anything that we have physically said in your own materials or anything like that. But you do need to release it under the same license that we have. We'll put details about that explicitly on the website for you as well.
Yes, we will also like to thank Maestretio again for the awesome theme music that you heard at the beginning and you will hear at the end of this show. Thank you, thank you, thank you. This is really great.
Absolutely. He's been great. I very much appreciate him creating that for us.
I think that's all that's left to do is thank the 20-something people who downloaded our first or episode zero, our previous episode. We really didn't expect that many downloads, so that was really great. Just a huge thank you.
Definitely, and I echo that. It's really good to know that you are actually listening to this. And like I said, right at the very beginning of the episode, please bear with us. We're bedding into this. You know, Yannick and myself, we're not strangers to podcasting. We have podcasted before, but this is the first time we've done anything like this.
Exactly.
So we will improve it, and certainly with your feedback, we'll improve it even more.
Yep.
So thank you very much indeed for listening. We will be back next time, hopefully within the next week or so, to do a review of episode 2 of season 4 of Star Trek Enterprise, which is the second part of the 2-part Stormfront.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Just listening to a member of the Otherside Podcast Network. Find more at otherside.network.